This is Wade Rathke with the Friday Weekly Wage World 30-Minute Interview. I'm here in San Pedro Sula, the large industrial city of Honduras, near the port of Cortez along the Gulf of Mexico side. I'm lucky enough today to be able to talk with Scott Nunn and John Anderson, community organizers with Acorn Canada in British Columbia. British Columbia on the west side of the country doesn't perhaps get as much attention for anything but high-tech and fancy views of beautiful water and the executive city where few people can afford to buy houses anymore. But for the last number of years, John, you've headed up British Columbia Acorn, and I know we've had some interesting campaigns, and there's some other things we want to talk about, like there's supposed to be a change in government that people have been talking about for months and months. It was a sure thing. Mm-hmm. The NDP was coming into power. What happened? But let's first go, what has Acorn been doing? John Anderson.
Acorn. In BC, we've been focusing on our Healthy Homes campaign and our Remittance Justice campaign and our Disability Rights campaign. So I go through one by one. Our Healthy Homes campaign, we just branded a campaign. We want our members normally talk about when we do outreach or we're having meetings, members are often talking about the lack of affordable housing. Vancouver's a very expensive city, Wade. Very, very expensive. But also because there's a trade-off between affordability and livability. So the lower, cheaper rents, often, you know, bugs, mold, it's a rainy place, so there's lots of mold. You know, there's problems with just bad landlords in general. So we have a campaign to try and get maintenance standards up, to have a floor of maintenance standards that would be properly enforced by the government, by the municipal government. So we won a campaign in Surrey, BC, which is a major suburb, which actually rivals the size of Vancouver, out south of the Fraser River in the lower mainland of BC. We won a bylaw, which is great, but obviously it's not for our members. That's not enough. So,
John,
you say
the rents are high. How high are they? A lot of people are listening to this show in the South, Arkansas, Louisiana, places like that. They think high rents, $400 a month. Now, I know the Canadian dollar is almost the same as the U.S. dollar now, but what's a high rent in Vancouver?
I think the average out in Surrey, our members would pay would be around $800. I know that that's kind of, you have your place, one bedroom, be around $800.
And Vancouver's even higher than Surrey?
Vancouver would be a little bit higher than Surrey. Yeah, so we're talking, you know, these are inaffordable rents. If you're making the minimum wage, $10, $10.25, this is well above 50% of your income. If you're like our members on disability assistance, which is kind of like welfare for folks on disability, that gets up to 90% of your income.
Now, can working people really afford to live in a city of Vancouver anymore?
More and more, no. I think what our big argument is, where do our members go? Because we find, as you leave Vancouver and you leave the beautiful, you know, you leave English Bay, it's less beautiful, you get away from the beautiful, all the great beautifulness of Vancouver. It still is expensive. So Scott was out in Abbotsford recently, which is an hour outside the city. How much was the rent for our members out in Abbotsford?
Jamie Slocum, our member, said he was renting his place for a little over $1,000 still. He was renting out a large section of the house, but still, he's also on disability, so a lot for him. Kathleen, a new member, was probably around $700, and that was for a pretty modest place as well, so in that ballpark.
Now, are they commuting into Vancouver to work an hour away, or this is just the closest they could find something they hoped was affordable?
Jamie had to leave. He was in a place owned by Well Financial in Surrey, and he got put up. He got fed up with what he felt, and what I hear a lot about the harassment in that building from the landlord, and the lack of recourse that he had to do anything about it. So he wanted to move, and so he chose Abbotsford for cost reasons, and also I thought he had a job prospect there as well.
Well, right. You got to go where the work is. So the Healthy Home campaign is obviously, since people are paying prime money for whatever real estate they can get, the fight for Acorn Canada, John, sounds like making sure they're getting some value for their money and not having the whole house right. crumble down in their fingers while they're having to go for their wallets to pay the bill. Is right. that what I'm hearing?
Exactly. Interesting, it's more and more we feel it's a deliberate disinvestment by corporate landlords throughout the lower mainland to be able to withdraw money, get the rents coming in, but speculators buying the properties, and then they all kind of crumble to the ground. They go, oh, well, right in time for the new Scott Subway expansion or this expansion. So we now get to build a pretty new condo, evict everyone. Everyone's out on their butts. So we find that that's a key thing. So that looks like that's where the struggle's going. But at the same time, we've been fighting a lot for just to change what they call the Residential Tenancy Act, which is just the tenant laws, landlord-tenant laws in the province to make it so that they have to keep the buildings up so that it would be illegal for them to disinvest money into their buildings.
We have a lot of those kind of campaigns in the United States as well with the Uniform Landlord-Tenant Acts, which, you know, a lot of people don't realize that's only in about 21 states. So in a lot of states, like Arkansas, Louisiana, others, tenants have virtually no rights. They can steal your deposit. They can promise you this, that, and the other. They can put any doggone thing they want in the lease. And mm-hmm. we're hearing this in Scotland with Acorn. We're hearing it in Italy with Acorn. I mean, these issues, it's a shame. They seem to be global, don't they, John?
Yep.
What's the other campaigns you wanted to tell us about for British Columbia Acorn?
Well, the big campaign that we put focus on is our remittance justice campaign, which is obviously, Wade, you know about this one. Come on, I'm sure the listeners...
We've talked about remittances on Wade's World interviews before.
So we know that, you know, the background of people, new Canadians, or folks new to their country, sending money back home to support their families, being charged high rates. We don't even, my main thing is we don't even know what they're being charged with, the exchange rates exactly being so right. widely varied and stuff. So we were really thinking, you know, we were on the verge of being the first place, or the first jurisdiction to actually put a cap on the fees. We thought a friendly government was coming in to BC that might be able to pull this off, and might be able to put up enough of a groundswell to make that happen. So we do have a groundswell going, but with just to have legislation passed in the province. There was a recent election that was lost by our allies within the NDP, the New Democratic Party. And after that election, we're stuck with the same government we've had for 12 years, a Liberal, which is really a coalition between right-wing Liberals, if that makes any sense for your listeners, and Conservatives.
John, they actually call themselves the Free Enterprise Coalition, so that kind of sums it up.
You know, we're going to have to take a brief break on language. The whole notion of a right-wing liberal, I mean, that does confront the imagination, doesn't it, men? But the other nice thing, and this is one of the things that's such a wonderful place about, such a wonderful phenomenon about Canada. You know, in the United States, it's illegal immigrants, or it's undocumented workers if you put a couple of paints on it, or it's this, that, and the other. Isn't that a wonderful expression, new Canadians? You know, that just shows a certain charm and elegance about our neighbors to the north. Now, right-wing liberals, now that, Scott, that's a whole concept. Now, what exactly are those?
Well, back in the day, we used to have a party called the CCF, which was basically called the Socialist Hordes.
Now, I want to make sure we're saying socialist hordes.
Yes, exactly.
Hordes. Yes, yes. That's H-O-A-R, right, right. Yeah. You know, once again, this American ear is not as fine-tuned to some of these, you know, expressions.
There you go. Yeah. And these socialist hordes actually were able to take government at some point, and that scared the whole business class considerably. So conservatives, liberals, business-friendly liberals all came together under the banner of this new Liberal Party, and basically they're neoliberal to their core, deregulate, cut taxes, cut social spending, yeehaw.
Yeah, you know what? And they always say, the conservatives say, why won't people identify themselves as liberals? Well, what the heck is a liberal now when you start, you know, and in the UK and the United Kingdom, when I was in Scotland, they talk about a party that's the Liberal Conservative Party.
Yeah, what the hell is that?
What is that? I mean, you know, liberals need their own separate button or they're going to be confused with the socialist hordes. or, who knows what, right-wing conservatives. But let's I don't want to get too far off the subject. We want to get back into the NDP, but this remittances, the cap, and we talked to, you know, some people working with Acorn International at Georgia State University a couple of weeks ago on this on Wage World. The cap is 5% that we're talking about in Canada and the United States and so many countries, and that's 5% is not something original with Acorn International and these other organizations, but that's the number that the G8 of the industrialized countries and the World Bank have said, that's reasonable, 5% all in. Why is it that we can't seem to get anybody to do the right thing on this? Now, there is legislation that was introduced in Ontario, that province. Is that right, John?
Yep. So there was, we helped spawn Acorn in Ontario, helped sponsor a private members bill, they call it. Which is kind of, in Canada, maybe a bill that, it's like a bill that probably may go nowhere. Because it's, you know, it's brought up by the third party, which is the NDP in Ontario. They are a great ally. Jagmeet Singh, out of a suburb of Toronto called Brampton, brought in the bill. And it would cap the fees at 5%. It would make everything transparent. And bring things under, I think, the Consumer Protection Act, much like when we won our payday lending campaign, under the same regulatory body as that. It's a minority government in Ontario, so we're hoping, you know, the Liberals, which, you know, this might get confusing, but the Liberals in Ontario, they aren't in a coalition with the Conservatives. They actually, say, oh, the case of the Conservatives are over there. So we're hoping that we'd be able to get the governing party to pass the remittance justice bill in Ontario. Now, we're not totally certain that we can do that, so we're going to keep it going. We've got the convention and on to Toronto coming up. We're hoping to keep drumming up the pressure to make that happen.
Well, you got to do that. It's an important distinction about this private members bill, because in state governments in the U.S., like in Arkansas, a members bill tends to mean something that only involves their district. That's a gimme. You know, it's sort of like if I'm representing this part of Pulaski County and I file a bill just to help somebody in this district, everybody else looks the other way and I get my bill because it's a private member's bill. Here, a private member's bill is just a way to throw something in the hopper, from what you're saying in BC or Ontario. And unless you're with the majority party, chances are rough unless you can get something really going.
Exactly.
But we're having a cross nation exchange here on language, aren't we? We're going to teach some people something, or at least we're going to learn ourselves. Okay, so that's the Remittance Justice Campaign, and Canada has really carried the banner on this everywhere in the world, so it's a wonderful thing. Didn't you say there was a third campaign you were involved in?
Well, our main focus has been around our disability rights campaign, something true, kind of an organic campaign coming out of our membership. Just around kind of welfare rights, but just rights for people on disability. They don't choose to be on disability. I didn't say I wanted to be disabled, but they're being treated like they are. So in Canada, we were just fighting to try and make it so that they would have a livable income or just have their smaller rights upheld. So we've been working on, there's a bus pass that if you're volunteering in a nonprofit, you get $100 a month, you'd be able to buy a bus pass in Metro Vancouver, tour around. We want to be able to make that a reality. The government's been cutting back on that program, so they put a cap on how many people get it. So there's smaller things that we think we can win. The main one the members want to win is a livable income, but we understand that that's going to be a tough slog, especially after the election that just happened.
Well, nothing is easy, but before we get too far away, didn't BC Acorn pass the first living wage ordinance or
in the country
of Canada?
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's been a popular campaign here in the United States as well. Tell us what the numbers were in New Westminster and how that worked.
Well, we've been a part of a coalition of living wage. It's taken a bit of a different track in than it really gathered steam in the United States with Acorn and others. Our allies in the Center for Policy Alternatives have really put on a really fine number. They've really calculated a number that they think is, or we think, you know, we it's I don't disagree with it at all. It is a good number. It's a pristine number that says people need to be paid. Now it's $19.50. When we passed
$19.50 an hour is what right. you're saying would be a living wage in Canada.
For both, like a couple, two kids, working full-time, that they would need that to be able to live in Metro Vancouver, which is definitely an accurate description of what goes on. In New West, we were able to pass this in New Westminster, Acorn was, in 2010. And back then, I think it was 1684, so it's gone up significantly. It has been stalled in most other municipalities where we've done it. Like in Surrey, we went and talked to the city councilors, and I remember, so like, hey, we want this living wage. We want to see this happen. They're like, there's no way in bloody hell. We can talk about this Healthy Homes campaign, but there's no way hell we're talking about this living wage. No, I'm joking around a bit. Our coalition has started a campaign at local campuses. We were able to bring a couple large credit unions on side to get them paying a living wage. But there is a distinct divide between people fighting for a minimum wage, which Acorn's doing in Ontario, $14 an hour with the Ontario Federation of Labour. In BC, that's not quite happened. I think people are, there's a distinct divide between people fighting for a living wage, a real number, a pristine number that you need to win, and then a minimum wage. Obviously, our members don't find that, you know, a contradiction or...
What's the minimum wage in British Columbia?
$10.25 at the moment.
Okay, so the federal minimum wage in the United States is now $7.25, and some states have higher. And so you're saying in British Columbia it's now $10.25,
yeah.
$10.25, so that's a full $3. And that's a fairly recent increase in British Columbia, isn't it?
Yep.
This was only a couple of years ago. I think we were sort of shocked to see that BC was trailing many of the other provinces in Canada. When did this increase in the provincial wage go up? Scott, do you remember?
Well, it was raised in the course of a couple of years in three stages over the past 2 years, and the last bump was just at the end of 2012, roughly. And you're right, I believe in 2001 we had the highest minimum wage BC did in Canada at $8 an hour. 2011, we had the lowest minimum wage in Canada, $8 an hour.
Okay, that's what I thought I remember. You know, in BC, the living cost is so high,
right.
We've already covered.
Right.
Shocking.
Right.
And that's part of this government we were talking about before. And
The liberals.
I almost didn't want to say it. I got myself more confused than anything. The liberals, which are the conservatives who were, and I guess once again are the governing party in BC, had us locked down to 8, but now it's been bumping up, and what, January 1st this year, 2013, it went to 10.25.
Yeah. And also to interject that this Liberal government also were the ones who rewrote the Residential Tenancy Act, which really helped start the whole housing issues that we were talking about previously. So it's been a really progressive government for, you know, average people, right?
Well, like I say, I want to get more into that, but at the point New Westminster passed their living wage ordinance, that 1683 would have been almost double what the provincial minimum wage
right.
was.
Right.
So the equivalent in a Little Rock, let's say, is as if they had, with the minimum wage $7.25, as if the living wage in Little Rock had been, you know, $14.50 or something like that. And now you're saying that 1683 has gone up to 19 and something.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when we were organizing household workers in 1978, and they first came under minimum wage then, and it was like $1.65 or $2.65 or something like that, and all the ladies used to refer to that as a top wage. You know, we'd say, you realize you're about to qualify for the minimum wage, and it's, you know, you'd say the figure, and yeah, I want to make that top wage. You know? This is like, you know, Vancouver and New Westminster, at least, which is, how would you describe New West? It's a working, low to moderate income area, or what is that?
Yeah, I think it'd be an average, you know, I think people would describe it as a, you know, mainly working class city. So it's in... it's close geographically to Vancouver. I think people in Vancouver would call it a suburb. It's actually an older city. I think everyone in New West would say, no, we're an urban center. But it's a suburban town. It's around 70,000 people living there. So it's a smaller, out of all the municipalities in the Lower Mainland, it would be one of the smaller ones. And it has a long, rich union tradition in the city.
And that probably helped them in winning this minimum wage.
It's a bit of a contributing factor to the whole thing.
You know, hats off to anybody where you still have unions who can help you. That's a wonderful thing. Well, we kept, you know, beating around the bush. So it looked like the liberals, who are actually conservatives, everybody was saying. I mean, every friend I had in B.C., I know Acorn Canada had just about been queuing up its top priorities for a new government. I think we all thought, and the election was only last month, right, John?
It was two weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, yeah. It is still May, isn't it? May 14th or something like that, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah.
We all thought we had this in the bag, and the NDP had not been in power for, as you say, a dozen years. Seem to have this one. So what happened? How did this go south on us? Scott, any thoughts on this? Because I think you actually spent the day looking closely at some of the campaigns, didn't you?
February, being allies, we were helping out on one of the campaigns, and I was helping pulling the vote, and there was lots of different theories that had been floated about why, whether it be the leader or the actual advertising the campaign, or the messaging, or a certain policy decision. Ultimately, the ground game seemed to be a little shaky as well. There's lots of reasons people are throwing out there. I don't know, John, do you have any particular...
Well, before we go to John, didn't you tell me just the other day that when you showed up to give them a hand, they were giving you the assignments, and they were going through the ones and twos. Let's go ahead. This is Wage World.
Let
it all get out there, Scott.
I just wanted the first one to say. Yeah, so that was the case. Yeah, so ones and twos, so like during the course of the election, hopefully you identify who your vote is, right?
Exactly.
One is your strongest supporter, two is pretty strong, pretty sure, and you want to get them to come out in there and vote. I was given the assignment of also going to people that they hadn't made contact during that campaign and said, well, they were like ones last time or twos last time, so we're pretty sure they're still voting for us, so get them out as well. And I knocked at a couple of their doors and got a couple of them to answer, and they didn't seem to be so ones and twosy anymore, so I felt like I was kind of chasing my tail a little bit as well.
Well, and working with raw meat, too. So a one and two in previous elections, they hadn't even, are you saying they hadn't bothered to contact previous supporters? That's pretty unusual. I mean, there's some low-hanging fruit in terms of organizing political campaigns, and usually somebody who's been with you in the past is sort of where you start. It's like on convention turnout, huh, John? You go for
the last couple. Right?
That's what you start your list with is to have a base. But here they just sort of said, okay, we'll just take them for granted. And actually, when you got your fist to the doors out there, it sounds like taking them for granted was a mistake.
I think that is a safe assumption.
Well, and we also have the irony that some people had shocking results. Our friend David Eby, who we've known for years because he comes out of the progressive nonprofit world. From what I understand, he won an amazing race. John, what are the details here?
Yeah, so he beat the premier in the premier's whole riding. So Christy Clark, who is the leader of the Liberals, who are the Conservatives, he was able to knock her off in a pretty rich neighborhood, which would be the postcard place you'd see on the postcard out in West Vancouver, or the West End of Vancouver. Yeah, so he was able to rather amazingly knock her off, and I think that was a couple contributing factors. I think one of them was that he would have talked to the previous supporters. I don't think there was a way that Dave wasn't door knocking.
Very good ground game.
Dave was doing out.
And
you know,
volunteers, I heard.
Right. He doing running the field campaign. And the other one, I think, is that there were some contributing factors around the NDP trying to appeal to green voters near the end of the election. I think. Because they thought they were going to win a landslide, and they said, not only can we kill the Liberals, but we also, if we just do this stuff with the say no to these pipelines or one of these pipelines, boom, we could also knock off our other upcoming competition.
And by green voters, that's just not environmentalists. That's actually a party in British Columbia, the Green Party.
Which elected their first MLA, their first member of the legislature on Vancouver Island.
Okay, so they just thought, they take those votes too. And
right. And in the end, I think they were able to win. Well, it's arguable whether or not Dave would have won. He won by 1,000 votes. He won by, 6% in the five, I don't know the exact number, but 5 or 6% in his riding. So arguably Dave would have won without that or not. But they definitely, Dave had a ground game going on, that's for sure.
Well, and for listeners in the United States, here's what's unusual. It'd be equivalent of a leader of the party. It'd be equivalent of somebody running for governor in the state.
No,
it's got a win from their home district.
Unheard of.
So the party wins. In other words, the governor wins at the provincial level, but then loses her home base. She's out.
She's out, but what will happen is one of her loyal soldiers, one of their backbenchers, one of their hacks who got elected, will step aside. There'll be a by-election. You know, probably you'd think in the safest liberal seat in the province, and she'll be in there in a couple months, a few months.
So it sounds like she used to have one of the safest liberal seats,
right.
And liberal, which is to say conservative seats. And but you know, it's shocking that what was the NDP's final numbers? I mean, because it wasn't that close, was it really?
That was a out of 80 some odd seats, the NDP walked away with 34 or 36. There's still some tight recounts happening, but but definitely in the previous session, it was close enough that if a few MLA liberals had to resign and a couple left the party for internal dysfunction, that there was a chance that there was only like a one or two seat difference, and there could have been some movement as far as voting down a budget or doing something like that. Whereas now it's just a solid majority.
Got a lot of majority. Yeah, so somehow to go from thinking you had it won, Scott, to all of a sudden seeing the liberals gain seats, that was
right.
Just like, that blew me away. I
right.
Couldn't believe that. And it's all in a parliamentary form of government, how many seats are elected. It's not just the total.
Well, they lost
numbers.
In popular vote too, yeah. Right? So they lost all around.
What was the popular vote? How close was that?
They won by, the liberals won by like 4 points, 5 points. It wasn't a close race.
You know, I know our friends in many of the labor unions that we work with were already making tenders to hire new organizers. They really were gearing up for some significant growth. And I know we had campaign priorities where we thought we had some commitments to really put some of our bills up in a good sense, good shape to pass, had NDP come in. What happens now? I mean, when is the next election? I mean, this is sort of like, what a slap in the face.
Next
huh?
election, fixed election date, it'll be 4 years from now. May of what, 2017? So, yeah, we were acorned, like our allies. We're, you know, had our things we thought we were going to get passed. We thought that we were passing the remittance bill. We'd have major reforms to the Residential Tenancy Act. And now, you know, now we're just rethinking, probably going on to a more, for the next little bit anyways, thinking municipally what we can win there and doing that. I don't know, you know, what, I have no idea what the labor folks are thinking. I think they're probably still, I heard some of them just left town. They were so upset. They were just like, I'm gone.
You're thinking about it yourself. Look, what's the city of Vancouver? They have a reputation of having a pretty decent mayor. Is that right?
Yep.
Gregor Robertson is what, second term, third term?
Second term.
Does he just keep running, or?
There's talk, Wade. Now, there's talk. These are rumors coming out from some of the friends that we know, you know, out of Vision Vancouver. And some of the people that kind of helped him get where he is, that because the NDP messed us up, that like this might be an opportunity. People are talking, well, the NDP model's dead, it's dead, that you would need some type of green, you know, left-wing green kind of alliance build of like another party that they would call Vision, which Gregor has brought up into Vancouver. I know a lot of our allies are frightened as crazy hell. I think a lot of our members would be too. But it's interesting, you know, people are talking about it, about the demise of the NDP and how this model works. I really, personally, Wade, what I think is if they just would have knocked on doors, contacted the previous voters, talked to people nonstop, they would have won that election.
Well, there's no way not to do the work, and I want to thank Scott Nunn and John Anderson of Acorn Canada and British Columbia for visiting with us for the last half hour on Wade's World. We're going to talk next week to the great blues guitarist Johnny Winters, who's going to be calling me from Switzerland. So listen for Wade's World. This is KBF, www.kbf.org. You can hear this podcast. We'll be up within 24 hours. Have a great day. We'll see you next Friday.